Flip over any food item in the store and look at the nutritional label, and you're likely to see a fair amount of sodium. And that's not a good thing to have in food for a bunch of people. Our next guest is one of them. Jessica Goldman Fong had to switch to a low-sodium diet for health reasons, and she's found whole new worlds of taste without salt, a world she shares through her blog as Sodium Girl, and now in a new book called Low So Good, A Guide to Real Food, Big Flavor, and Less Sodium with 70 Amazing Recipes. Jessica Goldman Fong, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, one of the first things you write in the book really stops us short. It says you're thankful for lupus and kidney failure?
Yes. And I actually mean it wholeheartedly, whole-kidney-ly. because, you know, I think for so many reasons it educated me. As you said, it opened my eyes to so many more flavors. I ate such a more boring diet before I had lupus and kidney disease and was forced to take out the sodium and the salt. Than I do now, just because I have to be more creative, and the relationships I form both with the people who grow my food and make my food, and that's beautiful and has enhanced my life too. So, and clearly it's given me a whole new career that I probably could have never imagined myself in 12 years ago. So I'm thankful for all of that.
You had to drastically lower your sodium intake. I mean, by how much? And I mean, how different is your diet from what it was like before?
Well, on average, we eat around, you know, almost around 4,000 milligrams a day. And the upper recommended limit is about 2,300 milligrams a day. And I've had to lower mine to around 1,000 milligrams a day. And what's confusing to a lot of people is I hear all the time, oh, I'm on a low-sodium diet, too. I never use the salt shaker. But that's not our problem. The salt from the salt shaker that we sprinkle on at the end of our meal, or I'm sorry, on our meal before we eat it, is really only about 5% of what we're consuming. It's all that processed food that we eat and eating out, and that's where all that over-sodium consumption comes from. So really, the beginning of this diet really just comes down to eating whole, fresh ingredients versus something from the package, being aware of those labels, picking ingredients wisely. And the other thing that people are surprised to learn is that sodium occurs naturally. So it's in everything, even that hasn't come from a package. It's in cantaloupe and eggs and meat without anything else on it. And that's why those numbers can really start to add up.
Okay, so let's go a little further into the salty six, because you started giving us some of those. So there are some foods that we'll find plenty of sodium in no matter what we do, salt or not.
Right, so the CDC and the American Heart Association came out with the six surprising sodium culprits that a lot of us don't even think about when we think of sodium. Usually we think of soy sauce or canned soup, but the salty six are bread, cold cuts, pizza, poultry, which is really a real shocker for people, sandwiches, and as I said, soup. And I like to add, you know, another culprit, which we've already talked about, which is just the natural sodium in food.
Okay, so I guess poultry, you said, is going to be surprising to a lot of people. How is there a lot of salt in there?
Well, a lot of us don't realize it, but a lot of the poultry, especially around holidays, gets brined and plumped with saline solution, partially to keep the meat moist and juicy, partially to make it weigh more and make it cost more. So it's really important to look for specific words. If it says brined or enhanced or natural flavoring, that means there's going to be more sodium in it. And so you want to also know what is natural for something like chicken, and that should be around 70 to 90 milligrams of sodium per 4 ounces.
So, Jessica, is there a lot of creativity in the word use with salt and sodium, just as there is with, you know, evaporated cane juice and that sort of thing for sugar?
You better believe it. And so in the book, we actually outline the things you need to know. Part of it is there's some tricky labeling where they'll say it's lower in sodium. That doesn't necessarily mean it's low in sodium. That usually just means it's a percentage lower than the original product. So maybe originally it was 500 milligrams, but now it's only 250 milligrams per serving. And then you have to be aware of, well, how much is a serving? Is it just half of a cup? And are you really going to only eat half of a cup, or it's 3 cups of this? So, again, it comes down to understanding the labels and being very careful and aware of how many servings you're eating and what that means in terms of your daily total.
Jessica Goldman Fong is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's been writing for years as the Sodium Girl on online, and now has a cookbook out called Low So Good. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about approaches to low sodium eating and food preparation. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Salt and sodium, not the same, you mentioned. This is a good thing to point out because, you know, those of us who do remember the chemistry can remember it's sodium chloride. Mm-hmm. Is what salt is. But so there are other forms of it that we get in through food as well?
Well, so sources of sodium, again, sodium is part of the table salt. But again, it's in all things naturally. So you have to be aware of that. And I think the other thing that confuses people is that they think sea salt is different than table salt. We hear a lot that sea salt is the healthier thing to use, and a lot of people assume that means there's less sodium in sea salt, but it's very important to understand that there's just the same amount of sodium in a teaspoon of sea salt as there is in table salt. Perhaps sea salt is a little bit healthier because it has more minerals in it, has a more natural taste. And I say it's the greater thing to use if you're going to use salt, because I think you become a little bit more conscious about what you're sprinkling when you're using sea salt versus table salt.
So, Jessica, is there a magic ingredient, one that can replace any kind of salt in all situations?
Well, I like to say anything salt can do, you can do better. And part of that is understanding what salt actually does to food. And I was lucky enough to talk to a food scientist about this. And there's five things salt does. It magnifies the taste of an ingredient. It helps wake up the flavor. It releases volatiles, which are, you know, the senses and smells that you get from food when you're cooking it. It balances out other tastes, and lo and behold, it makes things taste salty. And the amazing thing is you can do all of those five things without even touching the shaker. And you may be wondering, okay, how do you make food taste salty without salt? And then I go right back to what we said earlier, sodium exists naturally in food. So look for the ingredients that have higher amount of sodium in it, like chard and celery and artichokes and beets, and use that to your cooking advantage. That helps make things taste salty. It helps trick those taste buds. And there's a lot of other tricks, whether you're using the oven or fresh herbs or roasting tomatoes to make them taste more tomato-y, which is a very formal term, and using other spices to balance out flavors, not just salt. So really, when you take salt out, a lot of people think, oh, this is going to be bland, it's going to be boring, what are you going to use? And the truth is, you have a world of other flavor enhancers at your fingertips.
Can we assume you use ingredients like unsalted butter, or is that going too far?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people can add some salt in, and this book has suggestions, whether that's, you know, some shavings of Parmesan cheese or chopped pickles or a little bit of bacon, depending on where you land on that sodium scale and what your body needs. You can add some salty ingredients back in. Just it's about being conscious of it, right? Versus just dumping the salt in, you know, to your pasta before you even taste it.
I'm glad you mentioned bacon, because this is a pretty typical 21st century cookbook with lots of sexy pictures. And when I saw the bacon, I thought, oh, this is just being cruel. But but you can have bacon without salt.
Yes, so this was kind of my, you know, holy grail of things to make over. And my previous cookbook was all about taking the saltiest foods I could think of, whether it was buffalo wings or Bloody Marys, and finding low-so swaps to make them happen. And lucky for me, I have a very determined sister-in-law who's been working for years on developing a salt-free bacon. And the best part about what she was able to do was you can make bacon in an hour. No curing, no salt, and it actually looks, tastes, and feels like bacon. And the coolest thing is anyone, whether you're on a low-sodium diet or not, will love this because you can spice it to your desires. So whether you love it a little bit more smoky or sweet or spicy, now the control is in your hands.
Okay, so that's good to know you can make bacon that fast. I'll have to look at that a little more carefully. There's a pizza recipe in here for a pizza crust using chickpea flour. I mean, yeah. I understand you mentioned that pizza is one of the salty six, but how does the flour make a difference?
So So what's great is I steal a lot of ideas, and I'm all about stealing ideas from other genius cooks out there, and especially other special diets. So this diet, this idea came from some gluten-free, wonderful cookbook authors out there, and chickpea flour also comes from a lot of international cuisines as well. You see it a lot in Indian cooking, and it's made from garbanzo beans. And what's awesome about this chickpea flour crust, or what's called soca, is that it comes together in about 10 minutes. So if you are a fan of quick delivered pizza, this is a great trick to have up your sleeve. If you have chickpea flour in your cupboard, you mix it with a little bit of olive oil and water and some spices. You cook it in the hot oiled pan, throw it in the oven, and it crisps up just like you want your crunchy, you know, pizza crust to be. And you can use it as is, like cut it into chip shapes or just eat it plain with some yogurt spread on it. But if you want to go the pizza route, just slather on your toppings and you throw it in the oven. And since you're already kind of breaking tradition, I like to really play around with it. So use some pesto, but then cut up some stone fruit and put that on and grill it on a grill, or, you know, crack an egg on it and throw it into the oven and make it breakfast pizza. So again, once you start kind of breaking the rules a little bit, you start to see how creative you can be.
Sounds like fun, but you know, this points out one of the pitfalls is if you're making this chickpea flour pizza crust and you start reaching for an off-the-shelf pizza sauce, you're likely to find a fair amount of sodium in that, aren't you?
Absolutely. Well, the good news is actually today there are some no-salt added tomato sauce out there. So just like you want to turn those labels around to avoid certain foods, you want to turn those labels around too so you can discover the new things that are coming out now that are very health conscious. So they do exist, both online and in the store. And as in, I say in the book, if something isn't in your store, do not be afraid to talk to the manager or the buyer and say, hey, I heard there's no salt added tomato sauce out there. What do we need to do to get it on the shelves and in the aisle? That being said, there's also a 7-day taste bud reboot in this book.
And the
point isn't just to get your taste buds acclimated to food without so much sodium and heavily handed salting. It's also to get you acclimated to a new routine. And maybe part of that new routine is you love pizza, so you want to have pizza sauce ready to go all the time. And if you can't find it in the store, maybe that means on a Sunday when you have time, stewing up some tomatoes or making pesto sauce or whatever that is that you want, making a big batch of it on one day of the week so you have it for the rest of the week, or freezing it, basically just prepping so that you have everything on hand to make your food bright and colorful and flavorful and quick and convenient too.
The boot camp, the Taste Bud Reboot, is part of the Low So Good book written by Jessica Goldman Fong, who's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about low-sodium diets. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Ralph in Mendocino. Welcome to the Exchange. Ralph? We lost Ralph. I think he had a question about kosher salt. Salt is salt in this case, isn't it?
It's just exactly. Yeah. That's the best way to put it. Salt is salt. And I do have to say, too, if you're looking at salt alternatives, they generally use potassium chloride instead of sodium chloride. And it's only important if you're on certain medications or you have certain health conditions to just double check with your medical professionals first before you use those salt alternatives.
You mentioned something a moment ago about food being visually appealing, too, and I need to give credit to John Lee for the photographs in the book. Why do you want to make sure that you place some emphasis on the look of food in addition to taking care of the contents of it?
We very much eat with our eyes. You know, when something is beautifully plated or even just on beautiful plates, we enjoy it more. It feels special. And part of that is we also enjoy food more when we are a part of making that food. So going back to pizza, because we all love pizza, you know, whether having a pizza party where everyone gets to put on the toppings they want, or what I call a flexible feast where you lay out lots of different ingredients and people mix and match according to their taste buds, or even just putting something else on the table other than salt for people to sprinkle, whether that's fresh herbs or even crushed nuts or a blend that you made on your own. even that act of just playing with your food a little bit enhances it too. It elevates it. It makes it feel special. So even if you're just serving a bowl of rice, but you've, you know, cut up little strips of seaweed for people to sprinkle on top, suddenly that's more special.
So, Jessica, do you have a go-to dish? Is there one thing that you can pretty much cook with your eyes closed now that's your favorite, I'm tired, I want to make this fast dish?
Oh, gosh. Well, my favorite all-time dish is breakfast porridge, and that starts with just making a quick chicken broth. And I think the thing that I make, you know, once a week these days is just, it's in the book, too. It's called Quickie Shredded Chicken. And the idea is that you make this, you just throw your chicken thighs in a pot with water, and the chicken alone just makes this flavorful broth, and you get chicken to eat throughout the week. And I reuse that broth throughout the week. So whether I make a, you know, a vegetable soup or add some tofu and more Asian flavors, I love stretching out that one broth throughout the week in many different ways.
You've really gotten a sense of humor about low-sodium eating, I could tell, because there's a line in the book about this does not mean you're eating steamed chicken alone while watching Golden Girls reruns. So it's not just in the house, though, because as you point out, there are some issues if you start wandering out and dining out, for example. How do you handle dining out with a diet as low in sodium as your own?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because I really do think people get afraid, you know, when you say, oh, it starts with whole fresh food, that you're going to be chained to your stove forever and not going to be able to enjoy the social part of eating, which is so much of why we eat. And so this book, whether it's your office or going on a last-minute date, really breaks down all the ways to face those challenges in a creative way. And technology is a big thing these days and such a great tool, especially if you're on a low-sodium diet, whether that is helping you find the right restaurant or helping you communicate with that restaurant. For example, Open Table, which has been around in the Bay Area forever, allows you to actually save in your profile any food needs you have. So with a click of a button on my phone or my computer, when I make that reservation, it automatically tells the restaurant what I need.
That's great. And they just offer you the stuff that's within your realm.
Exactly.
Wow. All kinds of good stuff going on out there for people with low sodium diets, like Jessica Goldman Fong, who wrote the book Low So Good, A Guide to Real Food, Big Flavor, and Less Sodium with 70 Amazing Recipes. All kinds of fun stuff going on in the book. And I really enjoyed having a chat with you, Jessica. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Have a great, healthy day.
Thanks. You too.